And we'll get into some of the techniques of this Enochian vision magic and more with Lon Milo Duquette when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Just so you know, Lon sent us a couple of short video clips that are linked up at coasttocoastam.com if you want to go take a look at some of the other things that he does associated with the Enochian vision magic. Why can't you use it, or do you, Lon, to make money, to, you know, pick winning lottery numbers?
Well, I think a lot of other people are working their juju to get their own lottery numbers. Yeah. That's a very good question, and the best answer I can give you is maybe I'm as rich as I can ever make myself already, and how much broker would I be if I didn't do this? But I really don't know. You know, each of us, and this gets back to your last question, why the heck does somebody do something like this? You know, the Western mystery tradition, the Hermetic tradition, the Kabbalistic tradition starts off with the assumption that each of us has a great work to do.
Sure.
Each of us are here for a reason. The last 3 years, I've been part of this marvelous project called The Great Work, a DVD series. And it drives home the point that each of us are here for a reason. We have a great work to do. And if part of that work is exploring our own minds and our own psyches to get a better idea of just who we are and what great work we're here to do, then all of this stuff is at least worthy of consideration. And just because it's very old, and this all happened in the 1500s and or the late 1800s. In this new world where we're starting to think in quantum terms, where things like particles can transcend space, transcend time, in the quantum world you can move from A to Z without having to go through B, C, D, E and things, and that's exactly the mental techniques that magicians have been using since the, as far as we can tell, since the Sumerians and the Babylonians. And it can be very important if you resonate to that kind of, if you're attracted to that kind of art form, it is indeed worthy of exploring.
Could it change your life? Can it change relationships? Can it, you know, cure your ills?
Well, absolutely. The idea is to make yourself a more balanced, a healthier person, a person, you know, who has something to contribute. In other words, you get into the mainstream of the flow of your incarnational momentum. I know that's a mouthful, but that's kind of what it is. Who am I? I'm here to do something. What is my great work? And if magical techniques or yoga techniques or other sort of mind science techniques are helpful in order for you to find what your great work is and to help you do it, it's your duty. It's your duty to do the great work. And the fact that, you know, magic is the yoga of the West. And
if we realize that.
If we realize it. Magic is both yoga and magic have the same goal. They have self-mastery. They have spiritual enlightenment. They both attempt to step by step raise your consciousness to that level that it's full potential. But the difference between the Eastern yogi and the Western magician is in the way they go about that. The in the East, you know, the yogis systematically withdraw, they shut out from the outside objective world in order to access this greater subjective internal reality. And magicians, on the other hand, practice what I call outward introspection. A magician goes about accessing that same internal reality by projecting it into the outside world and then dealing with it as if it were right in your face. You know, one conquers demons within and the other conquers those same demons without.
Indeed it does. Let's go to Stephen driving. He's driving around and wants to chat with you. First-time caller. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, George. This is an incredible honor. I've been listening to you for about 15 years, and this is the first time I've gotten through.
All of us. Thanks. Go ahead.
Hey, real quick, I'm curious about the language that your guest just spoke. I caught it just as I was leaving work, and the reception wasn't very good. Is there a Native American influence in that language?
If there is, it's something that I've put into it from my, because I'm part American Indian myself, and when I read the words, I sort of get into the spiritual zone, if you will, and maybe I've got a genetic attraction to American Indian. You know, it is a real language, Enochian.
It is. Look, I've gotten a lot of messages from people. You did scare a lot of people with that.
I'm sorry about
that. Well, I know you didn't do it on purpose, but it did. You know, people said it was eerie.
Well, magic is real, okay? And when you come face to face with it, even the most benign, the most beneficent magic is strange, and things that are strange at first can disturb people.
Next up, west of the Rockies, Paul in Washington. Hey, Paul.
Yeah, how you doing? Thank you for taking my call, George. Good evening, Lon.
Hi.
I have a bit of a controversial question. Is there any evidence to suggest L. Ron Hubbard was a member of the OTO and his relationship with Jack Parsons, who was a student of Crowley?
Well, he and Jack Parsons, and if, for the listeners who don't know who Jack Parsons was one of the founders of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and Caltech. And he was a very, very interesting guy because he was also interested in magic, and he belonged to Aleister Crowley's magical order, the same order that I belong to, the Ordo Templi Orientis in Pasadena, California. And it is true that he and Hubbard were business partners, but it is untrue to suggest that Hubbard was ever a member of the OTO, but he certainly, was exposed to the writings of Aleister Crowley, who in letters to people at Agape Lodge OTO, Crowley did not hold Hubbard in high regard.
Was Crowley evil?
I don't think Crowley was evil. As a matter of fact, I think he qualifies as a legitimate holy man. But he certainly enjoyed scaring people who were capable of being scared. And he was an outrageous character that thought who underestimated his. I'll say he overestimated his audience, and he didn't always realize when people didn't get the joke, and he didn't always have the good common sense to stop joking when they were freaked out.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point indeed. Give us a few techniques in terms of what can people do to get into this.
Okay, the easiest and the first, and in my opinion, the most powerful use of Enochian magic is to systematically explore those 30 levels, those 30 heavens. You set aside time, perhaps 1 month, where each evening you relax and prepare yourself to scry. You open up the particular aether with the correct call. You sit quietly for 10 or 15 minutes, and then turn on the light and make a written record of what your experience was. And then at the end of the month, you review all of that. At the end of the month, you also observe what has happened in your life, what has happened with your dream patterns, if they have changed, what has happened with the entire spectrum of your day-to-day life for that month, and count that as one magical experience. And then it sounds simple. It sounds like it's nothing, but it can be very, very important. And you can find out things about yourself that perhaps you've never explored before in that time period. Okay, I know it doesn't sound sexy. I know it doesn't sound like
there's no magic wand involved here.
Well, actually, I use a magic wand.
You do?
Yes, I do. I've got an almond wand that, if you look at those videos that you've got the links to on your site, mm-hmm. you'll see my Enochian equipment. You'll see me doing Enochian magic on those little YouTube things. And I do use a magic wand. But the point is, I'm not doing this to make the girl next door fall in love with me, or I'm not doing this to hurt someone that I perceive as my enemy.
But could you?
You could try. The idea of doing something, and here we come up with the subject of black magic. In order for you to actually gain the magic power to hurt someone, you would have to transform yourself into the type of person who wouldn't do that. You can be. There are people who are immature. There are people who are emotionally disturbed, who would like to do magic so that they could kill at a distance or do other negative things, hurtful things. And the biggest hurtful thing you can do is hurt yourself, because magic, true magic, you will only end up hurting yourself with attempts at black magic. You could try it. People, bad vibe people, you know, all the time, people that don't even consider themselves magicians, send out hateful thoughts, consume themselves with fear and hatred, and you can't do that and be a true magician. In order to have enough magical, personal magical power to do that, you would first need to transform yourself into a person that stuff is not attractive to. Making sense?
Well, yeah, but what is then black magic?
Black magic is, my most generic idea of black magic is anything that you do that is not part of your great work.
Or does it necessarily have to be evil?
It doesn't necessarily have to be evil. And I think a lot of true black magic is performed and executed by people who actually think that they're doing something very good.
Ah, that's interesting. Chris in Texas, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes, it's an honor to be speaking with you, Brother Duquette.
Hi, Chris.
I know you're the U.S. Deputy Grand Master of the OTO.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering, what are your thoughts on the other organization, the first one to receive the law, which is the order of the AA.
And explain that, Lon, if you can.
Okay. The Crowley was responsible for two magical orders, one that he founded himself that he called the AA.
Okay.
And the AA is sort of like the Golden Dawn on steroids. It's sort of patterned along. It's an personal initiatory society, and you only know one person in the order, and that's your teacher. And then once you get to a certain level, you take on a student. So it's not a lodge.
So it's a one-on-one thing?
It's a one-on-one thing. And in a way, you know, magic and all initiation is not even a one-on-one thing. It's a one thing, you know. Ultimately, you're doing all of this yourself.
That's true.
But and the other one is the OTO, which Crowley didn't invent, but he inherited. The OTO was going, you know, before Crowley came along.
Now, Parsons was a part of that, wasn't he?
Parsons was a part of the OTO. And the AA is, and there's literature and there's rituals and things for an AA student to do. And most magicians, whether they're in or out of the OTO, sort of put themselves on the AA curriculum. It's a step-by-step initiatory program. And so I'm of course a big fan of the work of the AA, and but the AA is such a private personal thing that that people don't go around on the radio and say I'm on the AA. And
well, if you say that, you think you're an Alcoholics Anonymous.
Well, some of them belong to both, I guarantee you.
How many people have confused Aleister Crowley with Anton LaVey, the Satanist?
Lots of people have. And LaVey actually tried to use, you know, some of Crowley's magic as part of his Church of Satan program. But LaVey was less a magician than he was a sort of a shock showman.
But you are right. A lot of people do confuse them.
Yes, they do.
You know, that's one of the reasons I asked you a question about Crowley and the possibility of evil. He was more of a magician than a bad guy. It's LaVey who was the Satanist.
Yeah, LaVey, you know, proudly called himself a Satanist, but LaVey didn't actually believe in, you know, like the Christian point of
right.
View of how they view Satan.
Who was the better showman of the two?
Well, you know, I got to say, for sheer showmanship, LaVey was probably the most colorful.
He was the tops there.
Yeah, but as far as being a true holy man, in his own way, Crowley wins hands down.
Let's continue more of our discussion, Lon, when we come right back. Lon's book, Enochian Vision Magic, will tell you where you can get it as well. We'll be back in a moment. We're going to continue our chat with Lon Milo Duquette. We'll take your phone calls as well. The next hour, we'll get your magical stories. I want to know how you've used magic in your life and what has happened to you. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Is there another word, Lon, for magic? I mean, what exactly is it? You know, is it, you know, what is it?
You know, the modern sort of mind-spirit movement with people like Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer and their marvelous books and lectures. Wayne Dyer came up with a single word that, to me, totally encapsulates and defines magic, and that word is intent.
I like that. I think he's right.
I think he's right too, and I think the information that Wayne Dyer, Deepak Chopra, and others are bringing to a broad world audience is as much hardcore real live magic as the more spooky stuff that I'm attracted to, and. I think they're doing a wonderful service, but it's also pointing up the fact that I really do believe the age has changed. There's been a massive change, perhaps subtle in consciousness of the planet. More and more people are open to this. These ideas, they're open to the potential, the infinite potential of their own minds and their ability to transform their intent into tangible changes in their life, and I think that word is just says it all.
Jimmy Page, isn't he living in Aleister Crowley's mansion?
Well, he owned it for a while and lived there for an even shorter period, but he's since sold that.
Oh, he did sell it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What kind of from Led Zeppelin, the guitarist there, right?
Yes, he's a Crowley.
And that was off of Loch Ness, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It Boleskine House is called, and Crowley started one of his most significant magical operations there, the operation to invoke his own holy guardian angel. That started at Boleskine House, and he was very sad to lose that house. He turned it over to an acquaintance who misappropriated funds and caused him to lose the house.
Well, a lot of people are going through that now.
Yeah.
West of the Rockies, Eric in Los Angeles. Hi, Eric.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
We're well, thanks.
Hi, Eric.
Hi. I have a question for your guest, Mr. Duquette. Sorry if I mispronounced your last name.
That's good. No, you got it.
Apparently, I've heard in a few interviews with Marilyn Manson where he claims to have some kind of connection with the OTR Association. Is that true? And if so, do you know how much he's involved with the group? Is he a member? Does he practice magic? So and so.
Well, first of all, it would be a breach of his privacy to reveal his membership. If he wants to reveal his membership, he can. But I will tell you that, to my knowledge, he's not a member of the OTO. But I know he's considers himself a magician and is a student of Crowley and Crowley's Thelemic magic.
How many people are members of the OTO?
Worldwide, about 3,000.
Staunch practicing magicians.
Yeah, these are card carrying ones. Yeah.
Now, when you say card carrying about a magician, one thinks of the 52 in a deck type cards. That's different.
Well, it'd be more like tarot cards, I guess.
The difference between the kind of magic we've been talking about tonight, Lon, and the entertainment magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Two different things altogether. But do some people practice both?
Yeah, they do. I can't come up with a name right now, but there's one individual in Canada who's a wonderful stage performer and mentalist, but he's also very, very interested and a serious student of magic. I've gone up to the, as a guest of friends, up to the Magic Castle.
Oh, yeah.
Up in L.A.
And I've done that. I've had a great time there.
I just love going there. And I've talked with some of the magicians afterwards. And we've discussed, the more esoteric end of it. And I think deep down in their heart of hearts, very many stage magicians would love to be Magician.
Was it Greg Fruin, the Canadian?
Was he
the
no.
one? Okay, he was pretty good.
Not ringing the bell. But,
okay, next up, let's go to Scott in Los Angeles. You're up with us. Hey, Scott.
Hi, George, and good morning, Lon. How are you? 93. Yeah, I'm just kind of curious. You have a couple of videos up, and I noticed you didn't mention the most important one you did a few years ago for Hooded Man Productions, Lon Duquette's Note in Magic, Treatise on Angelic Evocation, pardon me. And currently still
is this a plug for another product?
No, Lon, this is a product that you put out that you have dissed and tried to play down. And
so what is your point?
Well, I'm just kind of curious why you haven't mentioned this, and you've done your level best to prevent this product from being sold. And this is the first chance I've had to talk with you because you've evaded every opportunity I've offered.
Well, I believe it's more in the lines of a personal call.
No, this is not a personal call. This is a simple question that your listeners need to be aware of.
Well, what is your question, Scott?
I want to know why he hasn't talked about this.
Talked about what? Because
Lon Duquette's Enochian Magic. I'm talking about Enochian Magic.
All right. Well, why don't you go sell it to someone else? Whatever that was. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question about about Madame Helena Blavatsky and the Nazi interest in the occult. I was watching an older DVD on the history of the Nazis and the occult, and it said that they got a lot of their ideas from her, and that one of their ideas was that the reason why Himmler and Hitler founded the Schutzstaffel was because they expected an attack on Europe from the Far East in the distant future. And it's kind of bound up with the idea that perhaps the psychic, you know, visions of the future are also in a way related to magic. And perhaps the rise of China and India now may have been something they were viewing and then got like a twisted vision of that.
And I really wish I was more of an expert on on Blavatsky. And I only generally know that the movers and shakers of the Third Reich, many of them were influenced very broadly with a wide arrangement of occult subjects, but I'm not your man to voice an informed opinion on that.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you.
You bet.
Next up, Lois in Texas, your turn. Hi, Lois.
Waiting for Dolly to pass by.
It's coming very slowly, but it's on the way.
Right. What I wanted to know is, when you were speaking and calling the angels, as a Christian, I speak in tongues. And what that reminded me of is listening to you is speaking in tongues. And when you speak in tongues, sometimes you understand what you're saying, sometimes
and sometimes you don't.
And sometimes you don't. And it's all about, so I kind of equated what you were doing then is kind of the equivalent to speaking in tongues, where sometimes, because it opens the mind and enhances your thinking. And like a lot of times when you're speaking, all of a sudden things you were trying to solve, the answers come to you.
Uh-huh.
Is that the same thing?
Well, I don't know if it's the same thing exactly, but I think it utilizes many of the same mental and psychic mechanisms that speaking in tongues triggers in people. Speaking in tongues is definitely something that happens during an altered state of consciousness, and one does seem to be opened up to different levels. The difference in my mind, at least, is when this Enochian language was painstakingly received one letter at a time with Dean Kelly. That once all of these calls were received, they were given translations of the calls, and it turned out that it wasn't the same nouns were the same nouns and the same verbs were the same verbs, and there was real life grammar and syntax. The subject of the Enochian language was taken up by one of the world's greatest linguists, a person that wasn't an occultist at all, Dr. Donald Laycock, wrote and published what's called the Enochian Dictionary. And he was interested in this language, not because from the magical end of it, which he thought was a bit fascinating, but from the idea of an expert linguist that a true language could be received in this remarkable double blind, triple blind, quadruple blind method, was how Dee and Kelly received it. So when we translate the Enochian language, we're really dealing with a language and a translation, just like we would translate, Spanish or French or German.
Okay, so if someone else spoke it, they would be saying the same thing you're saying, maybe with a different dialect.
Yeah.
But they would be using the same words, the same everything. May not sound quite the same as the
may not sound quite the same, yes. And George brought up the fact, or someone brought up the fact, that I sounded sort of like an American Indian.
I thought so, too.
So?
It did. As a Native American, I could hear some in there, and that's what I thought it sounded like, too.
So well, it may be because I guess I'm an eighth Cherokee, so.
Okay, very good. Janet in Las Vegas, west of the Rockies. Hey, Janet.
Hi, how you doing?
We're doing great, thanks.
Good. My question is, I'm a Wiccan, and I've noticed that ever since I started practicing and getting really good at it, that there is a black operation. I'm not sure if it's government or what, but basically this operation has attacked me, mainly in the where my skull meets my spine. It vibrates, and they tell me, stop practicing, don't do this anymore, and they attack me in my sleep and stuff like that, just trying to get me to stop doing this. I'm wondering, what can I do, and people like me, what can we do to make this stop?
Well, I really don't know what to tell you there, because I don't know exactly what the nature of your the phenomena that you're going through actually is. I do know that some people are just by nature not well fitted to practice magic, or at least practice certain kinds of magic.
Uh-huh.
And if you've already got some kind of other issues happening, practicing magic kind of only makes things worse. It kind of amplifies other problems. So I don't know who it is or what it is that's causing you trouble there in your medulla oblongata, it sounds like. But I do know that the nature of everybody's kundalini. Have you heard of kundalini?
Oh, yes.
Once you start trying to attune yourself or reattune yourself to different magical practices, if you have some kind of existing condition or blockage, it can manifest in your different psychic centers as problems, and it just may be that you need to back off and lighten up a little bit on the hardcore magic and see if that that condition stops.
Lon, of the 30 levels you talked about earlier,
mm-hmm.
What's way up there at the top?
The consciousness of pure deity.
The godlike consciousness, I guess?
Yeah, the Hindus call it Godhead.
Okay.
And it's really the... It really is the natural environment of all of us. It really is our true home as far as consciousness goes, and it's the ultimate experience. It's our ultimate identity, and it's the goal of that great work that we were talking about.
Ian in Toronto, you're up with us. Hey, Ian, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Harry. I had called earlier, but I fell offline. Am I online now?
I'm going to put you on hold because Ian is right there. Sorry, Ian, I punched up the wrong button.
Hello there, gentlemen. I was wondering, what's the difference between a magus and a warlock? Is one more evil and or powerful than the other?
Different traditions have different names for things. So in classic ceremonial magic, the magus is like the second highest level of personal initiation. People like Buddha were a magus. Christ, perhaps, at least Christ exhibited in his speech and his actions the level of magus. Avatars are maguses. But there are some in other occult communities that give themselves the names of magus. If it's almost as if that a magus has 50 hit points and a warlock only has 20. You know, So I really don't know what tradition you're working with there in order for me to give you a good definition of those terms. All I know is that in ceremonial magic, there is no level of initiation called warlock, and there's a very high level that's called magus.
You were in a video called Beyond Lemuria. Tell me about that.
Oh, that yes, Beyond Lemuria was written and produced by Poke Runyon, who is my dear friend, family friend. And one of, if not the most skilled magic practitioner of Solomonic magic, and that's the kind of magic where you evoke a spirit into a triangle and the magician stands in a circle and such. But Polk is a real scholar, and has a wonderful project where he included many of his friends. He wrote and produced this movie called Beyond Lemuria, and it deals with the Shaver mysteries and the Lemurians and Mount Shasta.
Oh, that was an incredible story too.
It is an incredible story, and I urge everybody. I play a little part in that. I play Hermes Trismegistus.
It's like a drama?
It's a drama.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I thought you were interviewed like a documentary. Stay with us. Lon is with us. We're going to take more of your phone calls. And also, now I'd like you to share some of your magical stories with us. How has magic had an impact on your life? We'll be back.